This is Cable from East Texas. You are watching Sinister Sightings. Creep it real and don't get scared.
Hey y'all, I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Sinister Sightings 301. Y'all just heard from Cable from Texas.
Oh God, okay, maybe I can do a better Texas because she's sick.
That little bit sounded like a scary movie.
It did.
So if you want to introduce a Sinister Sightings just like Cable, head on over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast. Okay, let's jump right in so we can save this voice. The first one is Sinister Sightings, Hat Man and Sleep Paralysis. Hi, my beautiful besties whom I've never met. I've been listening since last year and sped through all episodes and had completely caught up until starting an office job that I can't wear headphones and I don't want clients walking in thinking I'm a psycho. I try to listen in the car on my commute though. So picture it. I'm 15 years old and live with my mom in a house that's falling apart, but she's a single parent and that's all she can afford. I had found termites in my room and freaked me out. So I started sleeping on the pullout couch bed for a few days. To backtrack a little, this house was old. The original owner died in our dining room. I had already had some experiences with flickering lights, objects moving, and stereos randomly coming on, but I would brush those off and try to come up with logical explanations. I was raised Pentecostal. The only ghost there is supposed to be the Holy Ghost. So I'm in the living room with my little nightlight on every night because my dumbass was scared of termites. On the third night, I woke up in the middle of the night and my nightlight was off. I just thought to myself, the light must have blown. I then see something standing in the doorway to the hallway that branches off to my room. It was dark and black. I look closer because I'm blind and wearing fucking glasses and realize it was the shape of a person. Of course, I think it's just my mom looking in on me. And I say, Mama, is that you? No answer. Mama, no answer. Again. I look a little closer and realize that the figure is too tall to be my mother. My mother is 4'10 and I'm 5'7 and tower over her. This figure was every bit as tall as me or taller, but it had the shape of a top hat on its head. My anxiety having ass is thinking the worst at this point. Someone has broken in and I'm about to be murdered. I close my eyes shut tight and just tell myself it's not real. I had to have had them closed for just a minute or two, but it felt like forever when I opened them to see this figure standing above me. But it had to have been hovering because its face was right in front of mine. It's dark black, no feature face except its eyes. They were red and glowing. I try to scream and can't. I try to run and realize I'm stuck to the bed flat on my back. I've never experienced anything like this. All I could do was lay there and stare into its eyes. But then it dawned on me that I didn't have to. I could just shut my eyes again. So I closed them and pray. I prayed the longest prayer ever. After what seemed like forever, I opened my eyes. The figure was gone. My nightlight was back on and I could move. I didn't go back to sleep. I got up to see what time it was and it was 3:32 a.m. I don't know how long I was laying there, but it seemed like forever. I can only imagine it wasn't very long at all, but time happened differently during it. My mom was skeptical when I told her about it the next day, but she did agree to have our pastor come over and pray over the house just for my peace of mind. I kept this to myself for the longest time. I thought I was being punished and the devil visited me or something. Like I said, I was raised Pentecostal, but I had those wild teenage years. Now that I'm in my 30s and I love all things spooky and have listened to podcasts on this, and I know that I'm not alone seeing this creature. I know he has a name, the Hat Man. I wouldn't wish him a visit on anyone except maybe my ex-husband. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the story. Love you, ladies. You have no idea how much I have laughed and cried with you both and the impact you have on my life just by listening to y'all. Keep on creeping on, Angie.
That is one man I do not want to meet. I mean, I am kind of lonely now, so maybe it's okay.
And he would
hold me down.
Yes, I really did think you were going to say that's one man I don't want in my bed. But you didn't say that, so.
What standards?
Also, you don't think about that if you don't wear glasses, that you're like, wait, what is that? You know, and you're like trying to figure it out.
I hate that.
When you wore contacts, did you wear them 24/7?
No. I was so scared of getting like an eye infection or getting stuck in my eye because it was such a hassle for me to take them in, like put them in, take them out.
Did you see that? No, I know you didn't see it because I know you don't like this stuff. But that video of that woman that had like 200 contacts behind her eyes.
What?
Yeah. And her contacts were colored. They were like green. And so they would like lift her eye and they would just like pull the contacts out. And it literally was like 50. It was like an exorbitant amount of contacts that were stuck behind her eyes that they were just like pulling out.
I think you said that wrong.
Why? An exorbitant?
You said exorbitant.
Exorbitant amount?
Wouldn't it be something else? Exuberant?
Not exuberant.
Oh. What's that mean?
Like high. Like a lot. Excessively
high. That's what I thought. But I thought that was exuberant.
No, exuberant's like exuberant, like energy. From the character eyes of lively energy and excitement. Yes.
Oh, okay. And what'd you say?
Exorbitant.
Is that a word?
Yes!
I think because I keep thinking you're saying like something about absorbing, you know? So no, it's like.
It's exorbitant. It's E-X-O-R-B-I-T-A-N-T.
Exorbitant. I don't think I've ever said that word in my life.
Meaning the bounds of customs propriety, reason the amount of extent, highly excessive. It may not be the perfect word for it, but.
Okay. Also, if this sounds weird, please let us know, y'all, because we're doing it. You know, Carrie's computer actually decided to love us today. So we're trying it out. Also, I had to put on my heater while she was talking, like my little space heater. So please tell me if you can hear that.
Well, I can't hear it. That doesn't mean they won't be able to hear it, but I can't hear it.
Okay, good. Also, Carrie said my plosives, my P's and my B's are real bad. So we're going to see. Sorry, going back now to the story. When you said you were raised Pentecostal, but the only ghost was supposed to be the Holy Ghost, sent me.
I know one of my good friends at work, she went to Catholic private school, and it cracks me up when she talks about like school dances and stuff. And she would say, because it was an all girls, and so they would have to do the dances with like the neighboring all boys Catholic school. And she'll always say, like when they were dancing, she was like, you got to leave room in between for the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have another story that is about teenage life. It says, 'twas the scariest night of my teenage life. Hey, y'all, please call me T. Let me start by saying, listening to you gals banter and bicker makes me feel like I'm at the table with my own family. My mom's side of the family is from Arkansas and Oklahoma, so I was raised around a bunch of strong Southern women. People I meet always trip out at why I have a Southern twang, and I say things like supper, fixing to, and y'all, even though I lived in California all my life. I also wanted to let you know that y'all are a couple of my favorite best friends. I sometimes pretend we're sitting on the couch in the... I sometimes pretend...
Is Tay about to take my origin story?
Uh-huh. I sometimes pretend we're sitting on the couch in the living room watching Sister Act and holding hands. Okay, we're not always holding hands.
T, don't you steal my origin story? Me and my first boyfriend?
Oh my gosh. Donna, I loved your episode about the haunted Graber Olive House. I live in Covina, which is about 15 miles from the Graber Olive House. And our local market sometimes stock Graber olives. There haven't been any in stock for the past year or so, but I'll always keep an eye out for you. And when and if they come back, I'll send you some. They are really delicious and not your average olive. Okay, on to my sinister story where I felt inches away from being in an episode of Dateline. Picture it. Circa 1997, and I'm a sophomore in high school. I grew up in a small mountain desert community called Pennon Hills. Other than our local high school football games and riding horses and dirt bikes, we literally had nothing to do. This left a lot of time to stir up trouble. An average Saturday night when the weather was warm, there would be a house, or rather a field party, somewhere. This particular party was at an acquaintance's house, and I was staying at a girlfriend's house. Let's call her Chrissy. She lived just about a mile up the dirt road from the party. The boy who was throwing the party, we'll call him Jimmy, lived with his father and had very little supervision. Jimmy pretty much was able to do whatever he wanted, and he had been planning this field party for weeks. Rumor had it, about half the school was going to be there. Jimmy had been gathering old trash tires to burn as the center attraction and only source of light for this party. Chrissy and I got as dolled up as possible while trying to look low-key grunge at the same time for this tire-burning party in the middle of a field. Chrissy's mom dropped us off, told us not to drink and to make good choices, yada yada. We had a curfew of midnight, so her mom was going to come back and pick us up in the front of Jimmy's property. Fast forward 15 minutes into this party, there's well over 100 people mingling. There's a mountain of tires stacked up and flaming up good. Black oily smoke just billowing up into the air. Sorry, Mother Nature. There were kegs in the back of pickup trucks, trunks open with loads of ice chest in them, a different 90s grunge band blasting from each open car, and we were there with our own clique hoping our crushes would show up. Pretty much living our best lives. And then, in the distance, we hear it. Sirens. As fast as the party started, bam, it was over. About 4 tire trucks pulled up, flanked by 5 or 6 cop cars as well. Chrissy and I did what most of the other 15 and 16-year-olds were doing who couldn't drive themselves there. We took off running. We headed toward the front of Jimmy's property, which was the opposite of where the fire trucks and the cops had come in at. Once we got out to the main dirt road, we slowed to a walk and met up with several different friends who had run from the party as well. Altogether, we were a group of 7, 3 girls and 4 guys. Once we all caught our breath, we agreed that we would continue walking up the road towards Chrissy's house, as one of the guys showed us that he was able to get 3 cans of beer in his sweatshirt pocket, and another one of them had a flask full of vodka and a joint. At 15, when you still got 3 hours before curfew, well, hell, this is going to be a party. Further up the road, now about 3 blocks from Chrissy's house, we had all sat in a circle behind this little roadside cafe that was closed and completely dark other than the half-burnt-out neon sign for the cafe. We cracked open the beers, passed the joint and the flask around, and we were just talking about how silly Jimmy and all of us were thinking that we'd get away with this style of party. All of a sudden, one of the guys said, "Hey guys, what's that? It looks like we've got company." We figured a cop car was pulling into the cafe's lot and we hadn't seen it yet. But no, worse than that. Slowly, we all turned to see a silhouette of a person walking towards us with something tall and stick-like thrown over their shoulder. At first, they were coming towards us slowly. Then one of the guys yelled something to them asking what they wanted. And at that point, we realized it was a man, but it was still too dark to see his face. This guy was shirtless with long, lean muscles, and he's running towards us with a fucking baseball bat. Our guys yelled, "Run!" We all jumped up and somehow bolted in different directions. Chrissy and I ran hand in hand as fast as we could up the road. We could have gone one direction and been back to her house very quickly. However, we would have to go past the man with the bat if we did that. So we chose to go the opposite way and ended up running or full on sprinting over a mile to get around the rural neighborhood and back down to her house. We ran the whole time without stopping, without talking, and it felt like without breathing. When we finally reached her front gate, we realized we were both crying hysterically. We were coughing and gagging, trying to catch our breath, and just hugged one another so hard. We literally felt like we had run for our lives. Once we got inside the gate, Chrissy popped her head in the house and yelled to her mom that we walked home since the cops broke up the party due to the fire. And she told her that we were going to hang out on the trampoline for a while and then we'd go to bed. We plopped our limp, exhausted bodies on the top of the trampoline. We were catching our breath, and just as we started to actually laugh about the whole night, something caught my eye. Walking up Chrissy's short driveway is a shirtless, lean, muscular guy with a baseball bat over his shoulder. I was terrified and I couldn't talk, so I just pointed, and Chrissy turned around to see him. We both kind of whimpered and were trying to figure out how fast we could get in the house to wake up her dad or brother to protect us from this crazy bat-wielding man when we hear him yell from the gate, "Sissy, T, it's me." It was Chrissy's 19-year-old brother, Mike. Their mom had learned the party had been broken up shortly after it started via the police scanner they had, and she sent Mike out to look for us. Figuring that we'd start walking home, he took a bat with him for his own protection and slung it over his shoulder once he saw us sitting with a group of teenage boys in the dark. Mike told us that he was calling our names as we took off running, but we couldn't hear anything over our fear, our feet pounding the ground, and our breath. Gals, I tell you, at that point in my life, that was the most scared I've ever been in my 15 years on Earth. Okay, this is really long, so another time I'll tell you about some of the unexplainable things that happened in the home I grew up in and my very real dream, or was it, involving a black-eyed kid while I was staying in a creepy hotel. Love you gals so much. Thank you so much for being your truest selves and creating this community. Creep it real and get a little scared for shits and giggles. T.
I wish that y'all could have seen my face when you said that you recognized, like, that they were calling y'all's name.
Oh my gosh. One, is her brother single? Because tall, muscular, shirtless, has a big bat. He can swing it on me.
Literally knew that was coming.
No, but can you imagine, like, finally getting home, like, just being like, oh my God, we can't tell my mom what happened. And then seeing that man that you think is a man walking down and coming there. Like, that's a scary movie. You think you've outran him, and then there he is.
Literally, I was thinking the same thing. Also, when you were saying, like, they were like, look what's coming up or whatever, and you thought it was going to be a police. At first, I thought you were going to say it was an R word. And then I was like, wait, how did we ignore the termites thing from the beginning, too? That, like, I would have been terrified laying there expecting a termite to crawl on me, too. So, feel that. But I really was expecting you to say it was, like, a bug.
Oh, gosh. Not a
bat-wielding thing.
Man.
Man thing.
Shirtless man.
Donna's like, was he sweating or no?
Ooh.
Or is that just my fantasy of him? Donna's like, pictures or it didn't happen. I don't know why that made me giggle so hard.
That was pretty funny.
Oh, God.
And can we just talk about that? I almost couldn't get through when I was knowing what you were saying about us sitting on the couch watching Sister Act.
Holding hands.
Freaking love that. And also, I am so jealous that you got to have some of those olives.
I am never telling y'all my deepest, darkest secrets ever again.
Don't worry, I'll tell them.
Right. I was thinking when they said that it was, like, they were really tasty. I'm like, aren't they really expensive? They better be tasty.
Like, I better even like them. That expensive, right?
I think they were.
Oh, wait. No, they were. They were. Like, well, it was a gift boxes and stuff that were so, expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they better be so good that me, who doesn't like olives, likes them.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Okay, the next one. A car accident turns into a horrible date and ambient stories. Hey, y'all, longtime listener, first time story submitter. Like the majority says, I absolutely love y'all. We are BFFs, just so you know. I know when Donna starts snorting, it's over. I have an hour commute and y'all make that drive fly by. Now onto my stories. I was 19 and coming home from military drill that weekend. I had to drive back the next day and the weather was bad. So I was debating whether to drive home or not. Like Donna, I was... Oh, God. Oh, y'all know us too well. Like Donna, I was chasing dick and decided to go home.
Nothing wrong with that.
My first car was a 1968 Ford big body old grocery getter. Manual brakes, so it took a few extra feet to stop that big car. Weather was rainy and traffic heavy. The lady in front of me brake checked me and I hit mine. Well, mine locked up and I started spinning in a 360. The person behind me was not paying attention, and he hit me, which sent me spinning back around into the Jersey wall, those concrete barriers on the interstate. I stopped and got out. I was so mad. The guy gets out of his car and walks up. "You okay?" "Yeah, but damn, dude, did you not see me spinning?" He stood there looking at me like a total fucking weirdo and says, "Do you have insurance?" "Yes." He proceeds to say he doesn't, and could I not call the police? His car was drivable back to base, and I shouldn't have driven mine home, but I said I was okay to drive as well. He then looks at me and says, "Could I get your number to take you on a date?" The fuck? Not sure what to do and feeling like if I didn't, he'd call the police and I couldn't have this trouble while on drill weekend. So I said, sure, and we exchanged numbers. About a week passes and he calls, asks me on a date. I told him where we could meet and he says, sure, and hangs up. He really gave creeper vibes, so I made sure it was a place I knew that I could drive to and leave if it got weird. The day came and we met. It was at the beach and we sat on the pier talking. The whole time he just stared at me. Like he wanted to wear my skin. Weird. Not like love at first sight staring. He didn't talk much and it was getting late. I stated I needed to go and get home for work the next day. He seemed a little bummed, but I didn't care. I was getting weird vibes. We parted ways and I never saw or talked to him again. Thank the gods. Not sure where he is now, but I'm happily married to the man that helped me rebuild my car. On to the next story. My mom didn't sleep well and sleep aids were new to the market. Ambien was prescribed to my mom and she started taking it. She lived alone at the time as my sister and I moved out and my dad was an over-the-road truck driver. Her sleep improved and she was feeling better, but packages started arriving at the house. She'd call us, my sister and I, and asked if we purchased anything and sent it to her house. We both said no due to online shopping not being a huge thing yet. Totally dating myself here. She said it was really cute stuff and she just shrugged it off and kept it all because she liked it. Well, she was taking her meds and not going straight to bed. Instead, she'd sit up on the computer and shop. My dad was furious. He was the one that put it all together. We figured that out and the shopping stops. Months go by and my husband and I and our girls move in with my parents. Life is hard for young families. One evening, my husband and I were watching TV and my mom walked by in her robe. The next thing we hear is a chair moving across the kitchen and items moving around. We get up and see she's looking through stuff in the cabinet over the fridge. "What are you looking for, Mom?" Mumbling, she says, "It's up here. I know it is. Where is it? What you looking for?" Huffing, she stops and looks at me. "My damn VCR." I stifle a laugh. "The VCR?" "Yeah, do you know where it is? I need it." I sighed, "No, Mom, we can look for it in the morning. Come down and go back to bed." She gets down and back to bed she goes. Didn't remember anything the next day. Last one, trigger warning for blood and guns. We moved back out and she was again living alone. One morning, she wakes up and sees blood on her pillow. Concerned, she checks for her revolver that she keeps under her pillow. It's gone. Panicked, she gets up and starts looking through the house. Everything is still locked and no one is in the house. Confused, she goes to the kitchen, opens all the drawers and the cabinets. Standing there, she looks around and sees blood on the pantry door and on the refrigerator handle. Shaky, she opens the fridge to see the cereal box in the fridge. Confused, she takes it out and walks over to the pantry. On the shelf sits the milk. Beside it, her .350 Magnum revolver. Relief washes over her as she realized what happened. She thought she heard a noise and got up to check with the gun. She then saw nothing wrong and decided to get a snack of cereal and milk. In her Ambien haze, she'd cut her hand opening the cereal box, and that's where the blood came from. Then she put the stuff away in different places. So now we tease her that she's a serial killer. Hope you enjoyed these stories. I have many more to come. True crime of my birthday twin getting murdered across the street from me. Plenty of ghosts and spooky stories and overall weird funny stories. By the way, it's about a 6-minute read and not terribly long. I know Carrie's worried about running out. I listened to today's listener stories and decided to give some relief and send mine in. Today's November 14th, 2024. I love the podcast and listening to y'all's banter about what's going on in your life. You really don't know how much light and laughter you bring to our days. Keep up the great podcast and have a wonderful day. Candace from Middle Tennessee. Your mama needs to lock that gun up when she's on Ambien.
Oh my goodness. That reminded me of my sister so much. Also, I love the pun of serial killer.
Yes. Some people don't like the puns like that when it comes to crime. but it's funny to me.
Well, you know I love a good pun.
Also, what year, I wonder, was she looking for the VCR? Obviously late enough right? that, like, the VCR is not, I mean, if you're laughing, you know.
Yeah. Remember we went to that garage sale, like, just a few weeks ago, and they had so many VHS tapes and DVDs, and I was like, no, I don't even have it. Like, I don't even know how to play those anymore.
Yeah.
Like, Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, they were super proud of those, too.
They were. Okay, the next one. Haunted Hero Street. Hello, Donna and Carrie. This is another story from my hometown. I pulled together some facts about Hero Street, USA for your sinister sighting since you're running low on stories. It's mostly the history of some brave souls who left Mexico to get away from war, only to have their children sent off to fight in a different war as American soldiers. But it also contains the haunted spirit of Mana Muerta, so you can include it in sinister sightings. I know it's a lengthy one, but I don't know how to write a short story. From 11/20/1910 to February 5th, 1917, Mexico was undergoing the Mexican Revolution, a war that would pit brother against brother. Those who wanted to provide safety for their families would leave their homes in war-torn Mexico with what they could carry in search of better lives. Many of them ventured into the U.S. to find jobs and start over. The coal mines in Texas and Oklahoma provided work for some, while others found migrant work throughout the Midwest and California. Several immigrants found work with railroad lines. Some of the men migrated to Silvis, Illinois, because the Rock Island Lines was one of the largest repair facilities for locomotives in the U.S. at the Silvis Rail Yard. The proud Mexican immigrants were hard workers and didn't mind the difficult railroad work. Jobs with the Rock Island Lines also came with a place to live, old boxcars. Some Mexican immigrants lived there with their family cramped in boxcars at the rail yards. There was no heat, electricity, or running water. The winters were brutally cold, and the summer's heat in the boxcar was unbearable. Those who survived the brutal work and living conditions saved and put away money until they could afford better housing. The newly formed community built themselves a church in the rail yard by putting two boxcars together. The citizens of Silvis were not all ready to accept their new neighbors. The immigrant children were discriminated against when they tried to enter local schools. The townspeople complained about the Mexicans living tax-free in the boxcars. The city of Silvis had a population of about 3,000 at this time. The immigrants decided to move into homes they built themselves to establish their place in the community. Some of the homes were built into or around the boxcars until they could afford to put up walls. Several of the railroad workers moved to Second Street. The street was unpaved and a former dump site. Second Street is only a block and a half long, but the only place the Silvis Mexicans were allowed to live at the time. In 1939, Germany invaded Poland, marking the beginning of World War II. On December 2, 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, forcing America into war. When American men were enlisted to serve or drafted, many of the Mexican-American men who were raised on Second Street also enlisted or were drafted into service. Astonishingly, during the 1940s and 50s, 22 families from Second Street sent 87 soldiers to fight in World War II and the Korean War. The number of soldiers is astounding because the street itself is so small. The families living there were the very same Mexican-American families who fled Mexico to avoid war. Unfortunately, 8 of those brave young men would fall in battle. Tony Pompa, Frank Sandoval, Willie Sandoval, Claro Solis, Peter Macias, and Joe Sandoval all died in World War II. Frank and Joe Sandoval were brothers. They were the unfortunate 2 of the 6 Sandoval brothers who served in the military. Joe Gomez and John Munoz were the 2 men from Second Street who lost their lives in Korea. And I'm so sorry if I fucked up those names. And it might not be Sandoval, but that's what I know from Bravo. Second Street was renamed Hero Street USA in 1971 in honor of the 87 brave men raised there who served our country, including the 8 who died in service. The loss of 8 lives in the 1.5 block street was more than any street in America during World War I and the Korean War. Today, there's a memorial in the park built upon the hillside that the children would play in throughout their childhood. In Silves, there is a ghostly figure that is said to roam around Hero Street, crying for her lost sons. Some believe they can hear the wailing cries of Mama Muerta. I grew up on a street over, and we were afraid to enter the woods between our streets at night because Mama Muerta was often reported to be crying there. I never encountered her, but I would guess she's more of a tragically haunted figure than a scary figure. Many of my Mexican-American classmates suspect she is Angelina Sandoval, mother of Frank and Joe, mourning them in the afterlife. Though it could be any of the mothers, sisters, or wives who lost a loved one on this tiny street. Some of the descendants of Hero Street are heavily involved in keeping the legacy of the brave Mexican-American soldiers from this street alive. Many live in the same area. I hope the story honors those families. I'm sorry it's not heavily focused on the Hero Street ghost, but the heavy sorrow felt on that street certainly is palpable even today. It doesn't surprise me that a spirit, or possibly a few, still linger. Creep it real and don't get scared, Becky. Okay, so I really love this story. It's so sad.
How have we never heard this story?
Right? Honestly, why have they not made a movie about this?
For real.
And maybe they have. But if they have, please let us know, because holy crap. Also, I really hope that I said their names, you know, as close as possible. And Mama Muerta, that's so bad. It's like Mama, Mother Death, but I don't know how to say.
Yeah. It's so true that like any marginalized population, like the people who are treated the worst are the ones that are expected to go and fight for the country, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the ones that step up.
Yeah. Also, to be like, they're not paying taxes. Well, they're literally living in a tin can. Okay. So that's freezing or like so hot that it kills them. So, I mean,
yeah,
have a little compassion. So thank you for sharing that. Okay. The next one, a cursed family connection or just a coincidence? Hello, ladies. My name is Dee from Central... Okay, sorry. I got to read it how my head processed it. My name is Dee from Central New Jersey.
Oh, Lord, but okay. I like it.
Yeah, but from Central New Jersey, aka Dirty Jersey, which is what my friends call me. Love you, ladies. Your podcast is literally the only one I have listened to from the beginning, and I don't miss a week without y'all. This may be a bit all over the place slash long, but I'll try my best to have it make sense. I love listening to all things paranormal, and I'm a believer of things that cannot be explained. I'm very sensitive, so much so that I do not go into haunted places, not trying to bring anything home with me, especially in this economy. I would like to get your insight on some experiences, so here comes a little sad and a lot of strange, but all pieces that add up to a bigger picture slash a great question. To begin with, when I was about 7, my father passed away after being hit by a car. Both parties had been intoxicated. At that point, I hadn't seen my father for a few years due to my parents' divorce and his addiction issues. But 1 month before, I had just recently found his phone number at my great-grandmother's house, so my 7-year-old self grabbed her kitchen landline to call him up. I'd been asking for him to come see me, and he had told me he would. Sadly, that would be the last time connecting to my father, or so I thought. The day after he was laid to rest, I remember waking up to this light as I was in my little twin bed, and within that light, I saw my dad's smiling face at me right next to my bed. I still to this day can remember it so clearly. That light, so bright, shining all around him and seeing him made me feel so warm and peaceful. Now for a little strange. I don't know if that vision of my father awakened something in me, but through my adolescence, I would always have this odd, funny way of knowing if something was wrong or about to go wrong. My underarms and nose would be itching out of nowhere. And I mean, one of those itch you just can't satisfy. The more intense the itch, the worse the situation that was coming. My mother took me to countless doctors because she's a non-believer and just insisted on proving it was a condition or a coincidence, but every doctor told her nothing was wrong. However, after countless examples, my friends and close family noticed me itch or anything, they would take caution because my arms were never wrong. This leads me to my young adulthood, to so many dreams through the years of situations that would come to pass in my real life, and a constant feeling of deja vu. The last piece of this run-on email that might make it make sense is me reuniting with my father's two other daughters he had from a previous marriage. So yes, I discovered I have older sisters. The first time I met them, we discussed all kinds of things, clearly, since we had never met. And as we were in this restaurant, the topic of our last memories with our father came up. Not exactly my favorite eating topic, but I went with it. And for the first time, I shared the experience of seeing the light and our dad right after he passed. And the table went silent as they looked at me in awe and then made eye contact with one another. But instead of them running for the hills, my middle sister then shared that after he passed, she would see spirits and proceeded to tell me an experience that you usually only hear about in the movies. So the great question, is this some type of family connection that was released for us by his passing, or is it one great coincidence? Did my father actually come to keep his promise in seeing me again, or was I just a grieving kid? I'd love to know what you ladies think. Thanks for letting me share. Love, Dirty Jersey. Well, I think it was him.
Me too. And the fact that he saw your sisters too.
But I think that you probably already had that in you, and it was probably just the first time. Like, I don't know that it necessarily like awakened something. I think it was just something you already had, and it just happened to be the first thing.
Yeah.
But why has it got to be an itch, man? When your nose right? and your arm itches, that's awful.
I was just thinking, oh, no, I don't want that. I don't want it. Can I have another tale? Like,
For real.
Okay, the last one. Sinister sightings. Is it normal to have only dated criminals? Keep it anonymous. Feel free to give me a golden girl's name. Well, obviously, we have to call you Blanche. Hey, ladies. I've written in a couple of months ago, and I heard my stories on the podcast. I was so excited to hear it. Funny story about that. When I was in my car going to get Chick-fil-A, I was listening to Sinister Sightings. Well, my story came on. Once I realized it was me, I screamed with excitement, except I was already in the drive-thru at the window. The poor worker panicked and said, "Ma'am, are you okay?" I had to calmly say, "Yes, I'm so sorry." I was so embarrassed. I know I was as red as a logo when I got to that window. Thank you for keeping my life entertaining. Now to the stories. I've been in therapy for a couple of years now. Between life and trauma, it's a must to get better. Going over my life with my therapist, and I started talking about exes. It came to my attention that all of my exes have been criminals or murderers. It was a fun deep dive on myself. Me and Donna love the bad boys, apparently. So let's jump into some of my previous nut jobs for everyone's entertainment. First boyfriend. Let's call him S. I thought he was a pretty good guy. We enjoyed movies, music, and had some fun dates. We were in freshman year, so we hung out at each other's houses. He tried to help me with my mom's abusive boyfriend, but things started to change. I noticed he was smoking more. Well, it wasn't cigarettes. It was the good stuff, which was fine until he started selling his ADHD medication for extra money and then selling ecstasy, which all of this made me very uncomfortable and leave the relationship. He's better now, clean and sober with a fiance, so happy for him. Number two, Jay. I also thought he was a good guy. Well, him and his dad had something in common I found in our short relationship. Arson. His dad had started a fire in his apartment, which was above a pizza shop that he worked at. Best pizza in town, too. What a shame. Jay took after his dad, starting fires in his cars to collect insurance, and is now in prison for it. Number three, G. G was long distance. He lived further up in Vermont. Well, we dated for about a year. Well, as some young troubled kids do, we trauma dumped to bond. We talked about how my mom's house recently got broken into and it scared me since I was 16. He trauma dumped that he once shot a man in a home break-in. I thought at first it was a joke or some sick way to make me feel better. No, he was not joking. He got his mama on Skype call and confirmed. At 13, someone broke into their house when no one was home but him. The man broke in with a weapon to rob the place. G had his own hunting rifle in his room and told them to stay back. Ended up shooting the intruder in self-defense. It was a sealed record since it was self-defense and he was a minor. Understandable, but still freaked me out being 16 years old and finding out you're dating someone who killed a man. Later, we broke up with other trauma-related issues, with him using that same gun when I came to visit. I called my mama to make the visit cut short and leave that day. Don't know where he is now and gonna keep it that way. Number 4A. He was what I thought would be my now first nice boyfriend, but him and his dad were in a biker gang. I will not say which one, but we do live on the East Coast. I was living my bad boy dream. Bikes, deep conversation, grand gestures, hot sex, assertive men, going to bars, long trips, all to realize that it was toxic and not a good life to be in, especially towards the end when they were trying to get me to run drugs and him being chased by the cops. It ended after that. Alex, I'll take number 5, the main reason I went to therapy for 1,000. Let's meet T. 6 foot tall, dark hair, blue eyes, and 1,000% toxic nympho. That's what started our relationship, a hookup which lasted about 3 years. He was a fun bad boy, but I realized quickly it was not an act. T wasn't just a fun party type, but he had a problem with addiction, had been arrested for selling drugs and possession. He drugged me multiple times because he wanted me to have the amazing experience of whatever he was on. T brought me along for drug runs, which I didn't know about at the time till I was watching it go down. We broke up after 3 years of abuse and him cheating and his drug addiction getting the better of him, which led to his rap sheet with stalking and eventually physically attacking me. Now he has added to that list for drug possession, intent to sell, sex with a minor, domestic abuse, stalking, disturbing the peace, child abuse, and multiple fines for breaking my restraining order. To this day, I have a restraining order and plan to keep it that way. So after those crazy relationships, I got myself into therapy, and I can say my favorite bad boys are the book kind now. Thank you, ladies, for listening to my crazy life. Everyone else, stay safe out there. Background check all your partners, and please don't be afraid to get help. It is scary, but it's better than what's happening. Love y'all, and for those wanting to know, it's November 16th.
Wow. You know what? Like, people's issues with substance abuse, that's a whole nother, like, I'm not even going to comment on somebody else's issues with substance abuse, but to drug someone else is disgusting.
Yeah.
So because you want them to experience what you're experiencing, you are potentially creating an addiction in them. Like, that's disgusting.
Yeah, that's...
Like, if somebody wants to do drugs on their own, you know what am I to say? Like, don't. But also, I mean, everybody has their own thing. Because I just feel like there's so much addiction that it's like, yeah, I did it with my partner, or yeah, I was dating somebody that was a drug addict and, you know, I just wanted to try it a couple of times with them. And then now they have this full-blown addiction. And it's like, when you know what your addiction does to your life and how it impacts your life, and then to introduce that to someone else is just beyond. Like, why? I never understood that. Like, if you know the way that it has impacted you negatively, why would you want that for someone else? Aside from the abuse, like, but it just, if you just know, like, hey, I have all these issues and my family's cut me off and I have no, money and all the things, like, why would you introduce somebody to that?
Yeah. Well, you started in heavy. I was going to go back to Chick-fil-A and them hearing their name at the window and doing all the things, because that sounds like something I would do.
I did giggle at them. My face was as red as the sun.
Yeah. Also, what's your order from Chick-fil-A? And what books do you read? Because I also like the bad boys in the books too. I just have no boys in my actual life.
You've had some bad boys too, Donna.
Okay, one.
Well, props to you though for getting help and seeing your pattern and like trying to make a change. So good on you.
Absolutely.
Y'all, thank y'all so much for hearing my call for more stories. Keep them coming. Y'all hear, we're on November. It is January. We used to be like 6 months behind and now we're three. Butts are still puckered. So if you want your story read on an episode, send it in to us at aparanormalchicks@gmail.com. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.